Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. So James, we've had a number of meetings this week, important crunch meetings, and one's going on at the moment. It's a meeting of the Cabinet about Britain's future relationship with the EU. How have those meetings gone?
I don't mean they're making decisions. As I understand it, yesterday's Cabinet, it was more everyone was setting out their view. And there was no kind of vote taken at the end. There was no, this is what we've decided. Now, you can read this one of two ways. One way is they still haven't come to a view. The second is that before the Lancaster House speech, there was a series of meetings. And at the end of those meetings, no votes were taken. There was no decisive view expressed. But then Theresa May came back to the Cabinet and said, here's the text of the Lancaster House speech. We've discussed all this, which they had discussed all of it, but she hadn't indicated to them where she was going. So the kind version of events to her is that she knows what she wants to say and she's going through the process. The unkind version is that she's still not prepared to have that full-blooded, let's take a decision moment in Cabinet because of what that might bring.
And Katie, what do we know about those exchanges?
Well, we've had someone who's at the meeting tell Coffee House that these exchanges could be best described as robust and that people were talking, you know, frankly about their views. But as of yet, we haven't had the slightly, poisonous briefing you sometimes get from quite hectic meetings. Perhaps we just need to give it time. I think what's quite interesting is we're obviously hearing that no immediate decision was made, and perhaps it was a bit much to expect a government that is this indecisive to be making decisions so quickly. But what I'm finding quite amusing is that you have lots of pundits and apparently, you know, people within that meeting now kind of really suggesting something James suggested several months ago, which is that they just need to have an away day, perhaps a few days at Chequers, where they just lock themselves in the building and thrash out a position. And I keep reading that in more and more places, so I do wonder if perhaps they will get to that.
So to save time, you should just read The Spectator and then you'll know everything several months in advance. James, do you think Theresa May is getting more of a grip on ministers to the extent that they might actually be able to stomach an away day together?
I think the interesting thing about the backdrop to these meetings of the Brexit Cabinet is that in the last few days, the Cabinet have actually behaved themselves pretty well. No one sounded off. But what has made it so dramatic is the noise from the backbenches. And there, I think May has a problem, which is both factions of the Tory party debate over Europe think that May's policy is in large part to maintain equidistance between the two of them. And so what happens is they're both ramping up the rhetoric. So when Jacob Rees-Mogg became chairman of the ERG, which is the kind of biggest Eurosceptic lobby group within the Tory party, he said, right, before Christmas, the soft Brexiteers did very well by causing trouble. So I'm going to make lots and lots of noise. So he started making lots and lots of noise to try and move the Prime Minister's position. That then drew a reaction from the soft Brexiteers, which kind of culminated in the Anna Soubry's Newsnight interview in which she demanded that the ERG be slung out of the Tory party because they're not really Tories. And that, I think, is Theresa May's problem, which is because she has not set out a decisive position, she's not offered a lead, the backbench parties, bits of the party, are making as much noise as possible to try and force her towards their positions.
And do you think this rift can actually be healed, Katie? Do you think that actually things have been said that can't be unsaid now, particularly Anna Soubry calling for her colleagues to be chucked out of the party?
I think whatever position the government end up with, there are going to be some rifts that can't really be fixed. I think there's a question of, you know, I don't think Anna Soubry and Jacob Rees-Mogg are about to, you know, go for like a curry together. But at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily the case that one of them has to leave the party. So I think it's about getting to a point. If it's managed well, I think you can probably keep everyone within that party. But I do think also, I mean, it's calmed down a little bit this week, but there's constant speculation about maybe Theresa May leaving and someone stepping in. And we had the story in the Sunday Times at the weekend of this Brexit dream team of Boris, Gove and Rees-Mogg. I mean, I think if you were to have something like that, perhaps you would have a clearer Brexit position. But I think you would also really, really increase the likelihood that people like Anna Soubry would quit the party.
I think you also can't ignore the kind of Jeremy Corbyn factor in all this. I think that because Corbyn is Labour leader, defecting to the Labour Party is not appealing to any Tory, regardless of what their position on Brexit is. And then the second thing is that I think to other people who are dissatisfied with the you know, soft Brexiteers or former Remainers who are dissatisfied with the Tory position, the idea of letting in Jeremy Corbyn is at the moment, to most of them, even worse than the idea of leaving the single market and leaving the customs union. Although I did think this, reading David Aronovich's column in The Times today, there is an interesting thing I've noticed, which is that Chakramino on Twitter seems to enjoy defending Tory soft Brexiteers more than anything else. You know, as soon as they get criticised by anyone, yesterday it was Andrew Pearce's piece on Anna Soubry in the Daily Mail, he kind of races to their defence in the way that you would normally race to the defence of a colleague. And it does make me wonder whether there's some kind of emotional bonds being formed out of which some new party in Britain could possibly be formed.
And just moving on to the Jeremy Corbyn factor, Katie, we've got some more polling data showing how well or otherwise he's doing against the rather feeble Conservative government.
Yeah, this is the latest YouGov poll. And I think, although we saw in the most recent election how quickly the polls can shift. So obviously you shouldn't read too much into it. But YouGov were the first pollster to really predict where this result was going. And the latest YouGov poll has the Tories 4 points ahead, which, again, is a slight lead, but it's a bit more than the level pegging we've seen. And it's because Labour have apparently dropped 3 points and the Tories have gained 1 point. Now, obviously, a next poll could say that this is actually just, you know, a one-off, but it does really raise a question when we have Tory MPs thinking about firing enough letters to Sir Graham Brady that they want to oust the Prime Minister because they're so unhappy. But at the same time, Labour seem to be losing momentum and a very, like you say, feeble government. It seems to be edging further ahead. I think it's rather bizarre, but I think perhaps it's because on the issue of things like Brexit, I don't think there is a feeling that were the Conservatives to step aside, Labour would have this covered.
I think it's hard to remember a time when the mood at Westminster has been so out of kilter with the polls. I mean, the mood at Westminster, even in among the cabinet, is that, you know, that things are going really badly for the Tories. Yet, as Katie just said, that the polls suggest level pegging, or even on today's numbers, a slight Tory lead. Now, in a way, I feel like a kind of crack addict here, which is we keep saying that we're going to stop looking at polls. We keep saying that there are problems with polls. And then when an interesting poll comes along, we just want a quick fix and we can't resist the hit. So I suppose in a way we are a bit like that. And there is obviously a chance that the polls haven't fixed their methodological problem. But it doesn't seem, I think it shows you that there isn't, that Jeremy Corbyn picked all the low-hanging fruit in the election. But there isn't, you know, he can get to 40%, and that's all the people who are prepared to kind of climb on board the Corbyn Express. But he finds it very hard to get beyond that. But there's an inbuilt ceiling because of how far to the left of conventional political opinion he is.
And Katie, the Tories had their black and white ball last night as well, and that didn't necessarily get off to the best of starts, did it?
Yeah, so this is an annual fundraiser. This year they had at the Natural History Museum, which obviously led to the inevitable dinosaur jokes about the state of the Conservative Party. Then you had guests getting stuck outside. I think some people said it was about 40 minutes, but someone who was there but does work for the Conservative Party, to take it with a pinch of salt, told me it was only a 20-minute wait to get in. So Theresa May gave a speech. She was the highest bidding prize, I think, of all the auction lots. But I think there's often...
That's a relief.
Yeah, it's a relief. I think there's often a concentrated effort to do this. Ruth Davidson also did very well, and a bid for lunch with her went for a higher amount, I think about six times what lunch with Liam Fox raised. And a tour with Gavin Williamson of the Churchill War Rooms was won by a Russian, which is interesting for security chat. And also we had Toff, who is the party's celebrity supporter there, who apparently, according to my man on the inside, stayed pretty damn late.
I think there's an interesting question for the Tories, which is obviously the Natural History Museum has replaced the dinosaur with a blue whale. And my sister-in-law was explaining to me last night that scientists now think that there might be more species of blue whale than they previously recognised, and so that they can't actually mate and produce fertile offspring. I thought that might be a better analogy for the Tory party's problems, in that there might be more than one species of Tory and they might not be able to kind of carry on breeding successfully.
So the regeneration problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also this problem of, you know, Brexit. Brexiteer Tories and soft Brexit Tories and Remain Tories. It did make me wonder if I need to go and read up on my biology. So some good analogies.
Sounds like a much more violent episode of Blue Planet. Well, thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And a reminder that you can listen to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. And if you like this podcast, then you really should subscribe to the Evening Blend email, which is a free roundup and analysis of the day's politics. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening.